Domingo, Castro, Alfaro, and others.
Mr. Chief of Court, Mr. F. Walter Conrad, and Mr. Burke Valenbach, this is an argument for the statement, Mr. Valenbach, welcome.
May it please the Court, my name is Burke Valenbach, and I'm appearing in this case for Shell Oil Company. With me today is Mr. Walter Conrad, who is appearing on behalf of the Dow Chemical Company, and Mr. Russell Weintraub, who has made an appearance in this case on behalf of Shell Oil Company. Before the trial court, the Court of Appeals, and before this court, Shell and Dow have made efforts not to regurgitate each other's arguments, and we have addressed specific arguments which have emphasized the same overall theme that Texas is indeed a forum non-convenience state. We're going to do so today. I will speak on the extent of forum non-convenience in the United States, the early history of forum non-convenience in Texas, the early passage and statutory construction of the predecessors to Article 4678. Mr. Conrad will talk on the modern era of forum non-convenience in Texas, specifically cases such as Blaze versus Moore, Gutierrez versus Collins, and the public policy which supports the application of forum non-convenience in the state of Texas. The essential question before this court is whether the First Court of Appeals was correct in its holding that foreign litigants have an absolute right to compensation actions in Costa Rica. These very facts were reviewed by the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in the case of Sabaja versus the Dow. Found them to be a paradigm of the fact situation where forum non-convenience should be applied. That court was joined by the Court for the Central District of California in the Aguilar case, involving similarly situated plaintiffs. The plaintiffs abandoned their appeal before the 9th Circuit Court of Appeals. That court was again joined by the Southern District of Florida, facing these very same plaintiffs, among others, in the case of Cabalceta versus the Standard Fruit Company. That court reached the same conclusion as the predecessor courts which had considered the issue. And that same decision was reached by Judge Sherman Smith of the 61st District Court of Harris County. Judge Smith's order dismissing this case on the basis of forum nonconvenience is in accord with both Texas authorities and those throughout the United States and other common law jurisdictions. The opinion of the First Court of Appeals stands in a unique, isolated position which this court should correct. As the Ohio Supreme Court noted in Chambers versus the Merrill Dow Pharmaceutical Company, depending on how you count them, between 39 and 41 states have applied the doctrine, have specifically adopted the forum of nonconvenience in the United States. It is my belief that there is no state other than the First Court of Appeals in this case which has specifically rejected the doctrine of forum nonconvenience in this United States, and specifically not insofar as it would apply to foreign litigants who are attempting to bring their claims within the United States. I think in order to understand the...
You distinguish in any of the cases cited in respondent brief saying the following states don't have forum nonconvenience.
I discussed that fully in my brief, Your Honor, but I think the only specific case where a court has specifically said that a state did not adopt forum nonconvenience was a Court of Appeals case out of Louisiana, Casapa's case. I think when the Fifth Circuit, and the Fifth Circuit did make the same statement. However, the Casapa's case did not discuss the Supreme Court case in the state of Louisiana, Stewart versus Lichtenberg, which specifically said they would adopt comity as the principle under which they would or would not enforce forum nonconvenience in Louisiana. And that case itself was followed by two or three Court of Appeals cases in Louisiana, which were cited in our brief, which said that they specifically, in following Stewart versus Lichtenberg, were applying forum nonconvenience. So I think one Court of Appeals case, which doesn't even reference the preceding cases in that jurisdiction which specifically adopted the doctrine, certainly doesn't amount to a rejection of the theory by that state. And I also might point out that Louisiana is a civil law state as opposed to a common law state. So if this court were to adopt the plaintiff's position, it still would not have any pertinence to a common law state like Texas. And I think insofar as common law states are concerned, my statement would be absolutely true.
Counsel, do you concede that you could not have been sued in Costa Rica absent the stipulation of
the plaintiff makes that statement in the brief, and no, we do not concede it. I think when you read the cases on forum nonconvenience by both federal courts and other state courts, it is routinely stipulated, the courts have routinely required litigants to agree to stipulate to the jurisdiction of the foreign courts. Knowing that was the case, at least on behalf of Shell, I agreed to make that stipulation so that there would be no doubt if this court or the trial court before it had any doubt as to whether Shell and Dow made the same stipulation, would appear and answer in Costa Rica that we would, and that we specifically disagree with the plaintiffs that that would not be the case. That is, that there would be some question as to whether jurisdiction could be asserted over the defendants by the courts of Costa Rica.
What doubt would that be?
That there might be some plea raised to the jurisdiction of the court by the defendants, and we have specifically said we would not raise a plea to the jurisdiction of the Costa Rican courts. I think in order to understand the principles of the discretionary exercise of jurisdiction in Texas, it's necessary to understand how the predecessor statutes to Article 4678 came into being in the first place. And I think to understand that, you have to go back to the late 19th century when this court, in virtually the only cases which have specifically addressed the issue by this court of discretionary exercise of jurisdiction, were decided. And the very first one, and I think it's an important one, was Willis versus Missouri Pacific Railway Company in 1884. And I think it's important to note that the scholars who have looked at the doctrine of forum non-convenience have noted that the very first instance of its use was in a Scottish case in 1883. So Texas was moving into this area before the doctrine had really picked up the title and nomenclature by which it's known today. Willis versus Missouri Pacific Railway Company said that a Texas court could exercise jurisdiction and enforce a right of action which arose out of the common law, but that they could not if the cause of action was one which was created by statute, that that would be left up to the state which had created that cause of action by statute to enforce. I think that is very important. The next case that addressed the issue of the discretionary exercise of jurisdiction was Texas and Pacific Railway Company versus Richards in 1887. The important thing that Richards added to the discussion of this issue was they said if the cause of action which was attempted to be enforced in Texas conflicted with the public policy of Texas, then Texas courts would not exercise jurisdiction to enforce such a public policy. And many other jurisdictions throughout the United States was reaching the same conclusion. They would not enforce a conflicting public policy. And finally, the case of Morris versus Missouri Pacific Railway Company, which stated that where both parties were non-residents of the state of Texas, as a matter of comity, could or might not enforce jurisdiction as the trial court saw fit. The important case that shaped and extended these earlier cases on the discretionary exercise of jurisdiction was the pivotal case of Mexican National Railway Company versus Richards. It essentially referred to those earlier cases, but added a couple of key elements. One was, it said that where the law of the foreign jurisdiction was materially different, that the Texas courts would not enforce that cause of action. And it used the terms and the words in its opinion that where the law was dissimilar, then the cause of action might not be enforced in Texas. And of course, that was the case that many ultimate Court of Appeals cases pointed to as the authority for the dissimilarity doctrine in Texas. The important thing about the Jackson case is that the Supreme Court specifically recognized that they had jurisdiction, but that they were not choosing to exercise it. It was not a pure jurisdictional case. And the other significant thing about the Jackson case was, in the opinion, not only did it rely upon the fact that the law was dissimilar, but it cited several other principles under which it would decline to exercise the jurisdiction, the very kind of principles that the United States Supreme Court in Gulf Oil Company versus Gilbert enumerated in setting up the standard which would apply forum nonconvenience throughout the state. That is, I'm saying that the Jackson case was doing that in Texas in 1896. The important thing to look at in considering the case, the statute which is involved and is at the heart of this appeal, is that other states were also declining to exercise statutory causes of action or causes of action which conflicted with the public policy of that state, as well as Texas. Texas was not alone in this. In fact, Ohio passed a statute that was reviewed by the United States Supreme Court, Chambers versus Baltimore and Ohio Railroad Company, which is virtually identical to the type of language, almost word for word, as the ultimate Texas statute which was adopted in this case. In that opinion, they approved the utilization by the Ohio Supreme Court, but in some very important dissents which shaped American jurisprudence over the next 20 or 30 years, The dissents raised the question that if residents of other states were not treated similarly or given the same treatment as the citizens of the state passing the statute, that then the statute or the case would run afoul of the Privileges and Immunities Clause of the United States Constitution. Every scholar and commentator and cases became very conscious of that dissent, and there were a series of cases throughout the United States, and I named several in my brief. I would refer to them today: Reynolds versus Day in Washington, Herman versus Franklin Ice Cream Company in Nebraska, and Matone versus Argentino in Ohio, where they gave foreign citizens a virtual absolute right to appear in their courts, and they cited the Chambers case and the Privileges and Immunities Clause for doing that. But the United States Supreme Court, in an important trilogy of cases, the first one being Broderick versus Rossner, which was cited in my brief, and importantly in Gulf Oil Company versus Gilbert, which cited the earlier case, and in the case State of Missouri versus Mayfield, which followed the Gilbert case, the court explicitly said that they would let states adopt statutes like this and that they would not be declared unconstitutional under the Privileges and Immunities Clause. It was after that trilogy of cases by the United States Supreme Court that the state that we're in today, which is that, in my view, every state or virtually every state in the United States adopts and applies forum nonconvenience, has become the recognized position on this issue throughout the United States.
Counsel, are you telling us that Costa Rica recognizes a cause of action for products liability and breach of warranty?
I think that what I'm saying, and there are affidavits in the record which states that Costa Rica gives individuals harmed by products manufactured by other a cause of action within Costa Rica. And those affidavits say that they are akin to and similar to negligence and products liability actions. Is it known by precisely those terms? No, I can't tell the court that it's known by those terms, but I certainly can tell the court that it is clear, and I think it's unrefuted on the record, that Costa Rica gives equivalent treatment to litigants seeking to enforce claims against either negligent individuals or manufacturers of product. And I really don't think that's a matter in dispute in the case, and I would point to the earlier cases that have already been decided, Cabalceta involving these litigants and Aguilar and Sabaja, which have found that Costa Rica had an adequate remedy against the manufacturers in this instance. I think one thing that's important to look at insofar as the statutes which are concerned in this case is, and to a certain extent the case of Allen versus Bass, is that the 1913 statute, when it was passed, had a couple of defects. It didn't list citizens of other states as being among the protected people, and it did not mention foreign countries as being a place where a cause of action could arise. I think the 1917 recodification was an effort to address those omissions and mistakes which had been made in the earlier earlier statute, and I think the 1925 statute, which in essence became 4678, was part of the overall recodification of the Texas statutes that occurred in that year and worked no change in the earlier cases which had been held to recodify the existing law of Texas on this issue, which included Mexican National Railway Company versus Richards and the Willis versus Missouri Pacific Railroad Company cases that I referred to. So at this point in time, I'm going to turn the argument over to Mr. Conrad because I'm starting to impinge on his time, but it would be my belief that this court should find that Texas has been and should continue to be a jurisdiction which applies forum nonconvenience to claims of foreign litigants, and that they should adopt or give vent to the opinion of the trial court in this case and reverse the Court of Appeals opinion holding that there was an absolute right of foreign litigants to file their lawsuits and prosecute them in Texas. Thank you for your attention.
May it please the court. Commencing with the case of Gulf versus Gilbert by the United States Supreme Court, the court at that time in 1947 crystallized the factors, public and private considerations, that we now know in the modern doctrine of forum nonconvenience. In the case of Horkum versus Dean, decided by Justice Barrow, in the San Antonio Court of Appeals in 1962, which was the first case decided after Gulf v. Gilbert. We find for the first time that Justice Barrow, later on this court, citing Gulf v. Gilbert, going through the considerations in a forum nonconvenience case and applying the doctrine of forum nonconvenience for an incident that arose outside of the state being asserted in the state by a foreign plaintiff, and concluding specifically that forum nonconvenience exists as a doctrine in the state of Texas. There are other cases cited in the briefs thereafter, and I won't go into all of those except to note that there is no Texas case which is ever decided except for the one we're dealing with now, the Court of Civil Appeals opinion upon which we reached this court, that the doctrine of forum nonconvenience does not exist as a doctrine in some form or fashion in this state. This court's opinion in Flays v. Moore in 1962, which went off on the dissimilarity doctrine, noted that the only question in the state of Texas is the extent of the doctrine, and that is precisely why we are here. Now, what I'd like to turn
around... Do you think it's appropriate to... assume we get over the hurdle and it exists in Texas. It's appropriate to exercise that doctrine where the defendant party at their headquarters in the forum state, most of the documents in the forum state, many of the witnesses in the forum state.
Your Honor, I don't know if I would agree that many of the witnesses were here, but yes, I can point specifically to the United States versus, the Piper Aircraft versus Reno decision in 1981 by the United States Supreme Court, which was exactly that case. Wrongful death occurring in Great Britain, British plaintiffs, injury and death in Britain brought in the state where Piper Aircraft Company manufactured its airplanes and where its home office was located, its witnesses were located, forum nonconvenience applied, case dismissed. So yes, the forum does, the doctrine does apply under those circumstances. Now I think our first question here is the application of the article, what was then Article 4678, now 71031, and unfortunately I'll probably refer to it interchangeably, to the case of personal injuries. Personal injuries I would like to speak to independently of wrongful death for a very important reason. When 4678 was first adopted back in 1913, it stated it was for the residents of this state to be able to apply doctrines for wrongful death and personal injury from another jurisdiction. The simple reason is because wrongful death is a doctrine created by statute, whereas transitory tort is a common law cause of action that this court and the Texas judiciary has jurisdiction of the subject matter of, regardless of where it occurs, whether it's in Texas, New Mexico, or Costa Rica, for instance. And that was important in the Gutierrez decision in 1979. The problem that this court was confronted with at that time was what it was known as the common law doctrine of conflicts of lex loci, place of the injury controls. We had an injury that occurred in Mexico. We had a plaintiff who was injured in Mexico asserting against a Texas defendant a cause of action in Texas. The Texas defendant said that cannot be done because under Article 4678, the legislature has codified into this very statute we're dealing with today the law of lex loci, and therefore this court cannot take into consideration anything, change that statute. It must put it back to the legislature to let them change it because it is a statutory cause of action and is controlling. This court analyzed in 1979 in that case this way. It said, with regard to personal injuries, and that's all we have here from Costa Rica are personal injuries, with regard to personal injuries, that is incorrect. This court has subject matter jurisdiction over personal injuries. Article 4678 does not supply us with that jurisdiction. It could be eliminated from our rationale and we would still have jurisdiction over personal injuries. And therefore, regardless of whether one considers that it is mandatory or permissive upon wrongful death statute, on wrongful death actions, which can only exist by statutory fiat, it is not controlling upon a personal injury cause of action. And for that reason, the court dispensed with it and said, we will now look at the law of lex loci, a common law doctrine, and we do have the authority to terminate lex loci, a common law doctrine in the state of Texas, and replace it with the most significant relationships test, a common law doctrine in the state of Texas.
And all that was solely choice of law. It was
choice of law, but to get there, the court had to take into consideration the defendant's argument that 4678 was controlling and the court could not change the law because the law was of statutory origin through Article 4678, which is the argument of the respondent in this case. But the court said not true in personal injury actions because we have jurisdiction independent of 4678. It would have been different, and the court makes that clear perhaps if one looks at it, and I want to go on to this, but the court left the question of wrongful death. And that's what later on this court picked up in Couch, when in Couch, a wrongful death case, the court said the question is still open in the state of Texas as to whether or not 4678 controls the doctrine of forum nonconvenience in the state of Texas. But Gutierrez versus Collins is the one and only personal injury case where this court has dealt with personal injuries, a transitory tort, and has concluded that 4678 does not control because the statute's not jurisdictional. Now, because going beyond 4678 for a moment, I'd like to pass on to the question of the broader question, really, of 4678 as it applies to wrongful death, which we do not have here today, or on the other hand, if this court wishes to consider the doctrine of 4678, now 71031, in the state of Texas in general. I'd like to turn the court's attention to the fact that there is virtually no legislative history in the early years by which the legislature explained what it was intending to do when it adopted that. It is clear that the may be enforced language, which is pivotal, that is a cause of action arising in another state, may be enforced in the state of Texas, arises and is used for the first time with the inception of that statute in 1913. Wrongful death, remember, did not exist without statutory creation. It appears that the legislature was trying to allow Texas courts to apply in the state of Texas those wrongful death statutes if the other states created one, so that if there was a death in Colorado, for instance, Colorado had a wrongful death case, the Texas plaintiff, and it said residents of this state at that time, could bring into Texas the Colorado cause of action created under the Colorado wrongful death statute and have it enforced in the state of Texas. Our wording was may be enforced. We're fortunate in having a statutory construction example that is almost directly on point out of Alabama. We cite in our brief the case of Central Georgia Railway versus Phillips decided in Alabama in 1970. The Supreme Court of Alabama was confronted with was an out-of-state cause of action, an out-of-state plaintiff suing a corporation that did business in Alabama, exactly the situation we've got here. The Alabama statute said those out-of-state causes of action shall be enforced in Alabama. Exactly our statute, except using the imperative word shall be enforced in Alabama. The court said, therefore, since this is mandatory, we shall do this, we can apply forum nonconvenience when the defendant asks to apply it. The Alabama legislature thereafter, in order to rectify that situation, took that statute and changed the words shall be enforced to may be enforced, exactly what we have in the state of Texas. Added a proviso on that said, hereafter, Alabama courts will apply the doctrine of forum nonconvenience in appropriate cases. Now, if they had not changed shall to may, there would have been an irreconcilable conflict if an Alabama Court of Appeals or its Supreme Court had granted a dismissal under forum nonconvenience as it was instructed to consider by the proviso, and yet the actionable part of the statute still said, you Alabama courts shall enforce the cause of action. So they changed to may, a permissive form, to allow their courts to do what they were instructing them to do, apply the doctrine of forum nonconvenience in Alabama. Exactly the same result should be reached in this state where our statute says those causes of action may be enforced in the state of Texas. It's the same language now that Alabama has changed to give their courts the right to apply forum nonconvenience. Cole versus Lee, a case that the Dallas Court of Appeals decided in Texas back in 1968, is also instructive on this point. That case, again cited in our brief, involved Article 1975, which said that a A person may bring and prosecute to final judgment a cause of action in Texas involving Texas real estate, even though the defendant was a non-resident or a transient. We had a non-resident plaintiff, a non-resident defendant. The non-resident plaintiff said, I am absolutely entitled to bring this case in the state of Texas, just as respondents contend in this case, because of that statute. The court said, not so. May bring and prosecute and enforce the final judgment simply means that the court has jurisdiction. No argument about jurisdiction in that case. There's no argument about jurisdiction in this case. But as to whether or not that statute meant, as respondents contend here, that the court must take that case on to final judgment and not apply other common law doctrines like forum nonconvenience is incorrect, and the court applied forum nonconvenience and dismissed the case. I would simply point out to you that Justice O'Connor in the recent United States Supreme Court case, Chick Kim Chu versus Exxon, which was decided in 1988, had this very question before her in a slightly different version. What does the word may mean? And it's in Texas, may be enforced. Does it mean that all of the Texas courts must do something? She looked at the anti-injunction statute of the federal system, applying it indirectly to Texas, to an Article 4678 case, and said when that word may is used in the anti-injunction statute, it does not mean must. And the respondents are correct in this case only if the Texas word may should be interpreted to mean must, that the Texas judiciary must enforce foreign causes of action and cannot apply any other common law doctrines or rules of this court. I would simply point out to the court that this court itself has rules 39, 165, 215, all of which grant its trial courts the right to dismiss causes of action brought in this state. If respondents were correct, if a foreign plaintiff had the right to come into this state and take its case absolutely to judgment, regardless of the common law doctrines like forum nonconvenience, our court-imposed rules like the ones I have enumerated, then foreign plaintiffs would have a right in the judicial system of the state of Texas to ignore the common law and to ignore this court's rules, which vest certain discretionary powers in the court, and have their cases taken to judgment, even though they abused discovery, even though there was a want of prosecution, even though there was a lack of an indispensable party, whereas domestic plaintiffs could never do that. And so, Your Honor, we submit for all of those reasons that in a personal injury case, it's clear in the state of Texas that this court has already spoken to that and that the position of the petitioners is correct. But even in the broader sense, when we look at both wrongful death cases and personal injury cases, this statute simply does not mean what the respondents say it means, and it has never been interpreted to mean that by any court in this judicial system up until the 2-1 split decision by the Court of Civil Appeals below. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel.
Yes, sir.
It's obvious you're going to get some advantage if you try this case in Costa Rica as opposed to Texas. What is that?
I'm not sure we get an advantage, Your Honor. I've thought about that. In Costa Rica, it's true from the affidavit of Mr. Darren Bloom, which is part of the record, a Costa Rican attorney, that they follow the in discovery rights, the right of letters rogatory. It is not clear that they allow Texas-style or American-style deposition. Piper versus Reno said that is not a controlling consideration, but that is true. In response to your earlier question to Mr. Ballenfont, they do have negligence cause of actions. That's clear from his affidavit.
Is it equally clear that they have breach of warranty and products liability?
I do not believe, Your Honor, that he speaks to products liability, but again, Piper versus Reno, the United States Supreme Court noted that few jurisdictions abroad have American-style strict liability, and that is not a controlling consideration. The only question is there a remedy? It doesn't have to be the same remedy or even as good a remedy as exists in the U.S., and is there a forum? It's clear from the trial court's ruling and the affidavits that supported it, that there is a forum in Costa Rica, which is a democracy and has a court system, etc. I'm sure that the remedy is not precisely equivalent to that in the United States. there are few jurisdictions in the world that are directly, in fact, there are probably none that are directly equal to that in the United States.
Is this the only convenient forum to get meaningful discovery in a complex product liability case?
Is the state of Texas, Your Honor? I would not think that the state of Texas would be the only place that could be done. Let us just take, for instance, the Piper versus Reno case, which was case came out of Great Britain. They have discovery rights in Great Britain. Again, they are not identical to those in the United States, but Great Britain has a viable, well-functioning court system with full discovery rights. Canada, for instance, a decision was handed down last week with regard to forum nonconvenience and Dow, with the case being removed or sent back to Canada. A court opinion there commented upon the fact that there are discovery rights, of course, in Canada.
Can Shell and Dow employ be subpoenaed to Costa Rica?
We have entered into a stipulation, Your Honor, that we will provide our employees and our records in the United States subject to process out of a Costa Rican court. I can tell the court that Dow is registered to do business in Costa Rica and has been for many years. So we are like a corporation that is licensed to do business in a state of the union. We are registered in Costa Rica and have always been registered down there. But to make sure about that, we did enter into the stipulation that is part of the record. I believe it's transcript 817, if I remember correctly, where we agreed, so there would be no question about it, to take care of those problems if there were any problems. Thank you, Your Honor.
Court is ready to hear arguments from the respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Charles S. Eagles present arguments for respondents.
May it please the court. My name is Charles Siegel. I represent the respondents from the firm of Barron & Budd in Dallas. I think the court is concerned and sees the reality of the situation here. And I think that's something the court needs to examine perhaps before looking at the statute again.
And why don't you tell us why you don't want to try it in Costa Rica?
I'll tell you why we can't try it in Costa Rica, Your Honor. And I think before I list the various reasons, it ought to be self-evident. Otherwise, you would not find two companies, one of whom has its headquarters three blocks from the courthouse, seeking to move the litigation far, far away from its own headquarters, far away from where it has stipulated that over 100,000 relevant documents are located, far away from where its main witnesses are. Now, why would you have two corporations do that? I submit that if the legislature gave to defense interests or corporations the task of drafting a venue statute for the state, where would that venue where would suit be brought under that venue statute? Most logically, those interests would draft the venue statute saying we must be sued at our headquarters because that's the place most convenient for us to be sued. I think the obvious unreality of defendants claiming that they would rather try the case in Costa Rica because it's more convenient or because it's more appropriate ought to be apparent to the court. Let's examine first the evidentiary concerns. It's clear that all of the documents, at least for Shell, are located in Houston. Presumably most of Dow's documents are located in Michigan. The defendants have suggested in their briefs that, well, if the case is tried here, we are not going to be able to compel witnesses from Costa Rica to testify. We're not going to be able to implead third parties. Those are assertions that are, those are incantations that are made in a lot of forum nonconvenience cases, and if the court examines the actual reality behind those assertions, what will it find? Let's say, as defendants assert, that non-party depositions are not permitted under Costa Rican law. Well, if the case is tried here, then they will be able to compel the attendance of the logical third-party witnesses, that is, the witnesses under the control of the employer, because the employer is an American company headquartered in Florida. As for Costa Rican witnesses, it may be that they will be able to compel process or compel testimony under Texas Rule of Civil Procedure 188, which, by the way, is one of the most advanced tools for compelling or obtaining foreign testimony. The situation then is that, in fact, trial in Texas will be more advantageous to petitioners because they will get more witnesses by American compulsion of the employer's witnesses and the employer's documents. In this case, we took the deposition of the employer, concerning pesticide purchases made in Costa Rica. All of those documents were produced from Costa Rica. The deposition was held in Florida, where the employer resides and where that person resides at, in the city of the employer's headquarters. No difficulties were encountered.
If you were going to tell us why you couldn't have a case in Costa Rica, I haven't heard that yet.
Okay.
Are we getting to that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Why cannot we try the case in Costa Rica? Number one, we would face severe evidentiary problems. The defendants, in contrast to the respondents who have offered to have stipulated that all of our plaintiffs, all of our medical witnesses, all of our co-workers will be produced willingly in Houston, defendants have not made an equivalent stipulation. They will only produce their employees in the United States, which they would be required to do anyway. And there is, according to them, no Costa Rican compulsory power to make those witnesses come to Costa Rica. Second of all, it's uncontradicted in the record that a Costa Rican fact finder would likely award a recovery far, far smaller than what plaintiffs might reasonably expect here. Now, it's important for the court to understand that we are not suggesting that simply because juries in the United States award damages in excess of those in other countries, that all foreign plaintiffs are entitled to sue in the United States. But the practical reality of the situation is that no law firm in Costa Rica can take on Dow and Shell. And I think the court ought to realize that.
So far what I've heard is the principal argument has been gives rise to suspicion that a defendant whose headquarters in Texas would want to try the case in Costa Rica. But, you know, similarly, the flip side of that, it gives rise to suspicion that a plaintiff living in Costa Rica would be real anxious to come get a forum hearing in the United States. I mean, if you were drafting the ideal rule as a plaintiff, you'd want to litigate with your friends and neighbors as the jurors.
I think we would want to litigate where we could possibly get a remedy against the defendant.
And the defendant would want to litigate where they'd have the best chance of the least remedy. I think, and everybody understands the relative advantages that each party wants. And the question comes down, really, is there a forum non-convenient remedy in Texas available in this type of case?
Okay.
We really don't need to reach wrongful death in this case. And then secondly, we would like to hear a lot on that. What are the factors? Where do we go to consider this? Because we don't have fleshed out Texas law.
That's true, Your Honor. Remaining on that point for one second, the functional equivalent of dismissal in this case is obviously no remedy. And it is uncontradicted in the record that the probable maximum recovery that a Costa Rican fact finder might award would be $1,800. If that amount were available, that would be a different situation. That would be Costa Rica thinks that's how much sterilization is worth.
That is uncontradicted.
There is no statutory limit. However, we obtained an affidavit from a Costa Rican labor law judge saying that the typical award in such a case, if there had ever been such a case brought, would be around 100,000 colones in Costa Rican currency, or approximately $1,800. My question to the court is approximately $1,800. My question to the court is, let's assume a Costa Rican lawyer would actually take on this case. Let's assume with the defendants that this will be litigated here. How much will it cost that lawyer to fly to Midland, Michigan to depose one Dow official? It goes without saying that many such depositions need to be taken in these complex cases. The economic reality of the situation here is that the plaintiffs have no remedy anywhere else. If it were simply a matter of, we want a larger award here, but if we can't get it, we'll go sue in Costa Rica, that would be different, and that would place us in a much more untenable position. The point is, and it's, as it is evident so clearly by defendants' desperate attempt to shift the litigation far away from where it's logically convenient for them to litigate, is that plaintiffs have no possible remedy outside this country. Turning to whether we do have a forum non-convenience doctrine.
Let me ask you one other question before you get that. Is there anything in the record that shows that Dow and Shell are the primary employers of people in Costa Rica?
Whether Dow and Shell are primary employers of people?
Do they employ more people than anybody else?
No. To my knowledge, Dow and Shell don't employ anyone in Costa Rica. They have sold products to companies which then use them in Costa Rica. The banana company, the employer in this case, is a very powerful company in Costa Rica, but it is it's headquartered in this country, and as I've said, we have deposed officials from that country. And in a related point, I think it is uncontradicted in the record that the defendants are not subject to Costa Rican jurisdiction. I think that was an affidavit made by Mr. Rios, a Costa Rican lawyer. They are not subject to jurisdiction there. There was no contradiction on that point from the defendants. Otherwise, why would they have stipulated to jurisdiction if they were already subject to it? In that regard, I might also point out that they have postulated the existence of third parties. We have asked them for 5 years to identify such third parties. I will ask the court if the court thinks it's likely that any third parties that are ever identified will submit to Costa Rican jurisdiction as eagerly as the petitioners have. That is not likely. Therefore, the imagination that it might be more convenient or fair to litigate in Costa Rica because third parties can be gotten is illusory. Finally, on that point, Rule 39 does provide for dismissal if indispensable parties cannot be joined. And if Dow and Shell were to show that there is an indispensable party that cannot be joined in this case, then we would be dismissed. We're certainly not contending, as Mr. Conrad states, that we're immune to all the various procedural modes of dismissal that any litigant faces.
Well, in that regard, the fact that they are registered to do business in Costa Rica, doesn't that give that country jurisdiction to litigate any issues over them?
Dow is registered to do business. It was Mr. Rios' uncontradicted conclusion that that still doesn't make them subject to jurisdiction under Costa Rican jurisdictional laws. But in any event, there's no dispute as to Shell, which is the Texas defendant. Shell hasn't even contended that it is subject to Costa Rican jurisdiction. And they did have to stipulate it, just as Dow has done.
Counsel, if Justice Polk fitted the statement, which I haven't read, but it shows up in one of the briefs that, in effect, if he were to hold a firm court of appeal, he would become the courthouse for the world. Would you speak to that?
Yes, I would, Your Honor. I think, first of all, under the statute that we contend gives us the right to sue here, Texas has existed in this state since 1913 or 1917, and there is no evidence that we've been flooded by foreign causes of action. The Allen versus Bass case, which is the only holding directly dealing with the possibility of discretionary dismissal under the statute, and holding there is none, has existed for 57 years. And similarly, with the state of the law as it is, there haven't been any flooding of foreign plaintiffs. Now, I would also point out more...
If we had a Supreme Court opinion directly in point that said the doctrine of foreign non-convenience not exist in Texas, you don't think we'll have the Bhopal, India accident come down here, or the Scotland aviation match disaster down here, and every other lawsuit, particularly matter of order?
I don't think there would, Your Honor, because I think there are several barriers to such suits that effectively keep most of those suits out already. First of all cases that can be brought under the federal jurisdiction will assuredly be removed by defendants to gain access to the federal forum nonconvenience doctrine, thereby leaving only cases that you have a Texas resident in, where it is implausible to contend that there's a large amount of inconvenience. It has been suggested by some of the amici that will lead to frivolous claims against peripheral Texas defendants so as to keep the whole underlying lawsuit in Texas state court. That won't happen either. It's clear under federal doctrine that any defendant, whether a Texas defendant or not, can remove the whole case, if they have been fraudulently sued. So, in effect, under the current jurisdictional matrix, we will wind up in Texas with cases against Texas residents only, and only cases where there's a genuine claim against Texas residents. Similarly, there's been a lot of suggestion in the brief that state courts will thereby end up litigating maritime claims, and that will infringe on maritime uniformity concerns and so on. Maritime claims, as the federal doctrine dictates and as this court held in Mandel and Wright versus Thomas, are subject to federal law, and that includes federal forum nonconvenience law. Any case that somehow manages to stay in state court but nonetheless arises in a maritime context is governed by maritime federal forum nonconvenience law, and that includes...
Well, that's substantive. You can say that the forum nonconvenience is a substantive doctrine.
Well, it's been held that the force of maritime preemption includes forum nonconvenience. In the Erie context, forum nonconvenience has been held to be procedural, but the Fifth Circuit has held that in the maritime preemption context, maritime federal forum nonconvenience governs in state court. That's the Chick-Cam-Chu case. That holding was left untouched by the Supreme Court resolution. As the court is no doubt aware, a large number, probably the majority, of foreign claims that are brought in Texas state court involve offshore oil rigs. There may be a concern that we're about to be flooded by cases arising from the Piper Alpha incident in Scotland. The Amici have attempted to somehow link us to Benson Musselwhite, and that the foreign offshore claimants are poised at the courthouse door. All of those claims will be subject to dismissal under federal foreign nonconvenience law. I think, therefore, that there are already a number of existing barriers in place that will effectively keep out most of this litigation. We will only wind up with genuine claims against Texas residents.
I think we've gotten the cart before the horse. It's the fault of our question. But can we go back to how, go back to the first.
Okay.
How you contend first that we don't have foreign nonconvenience jurisdiction here in Texas. Then, with whatever time is remaining, we can go back to the policy argument.
I think that it requires a reading of the statute that is non-straightforward, that ignores the plain wording of the statute to hold that we are subject to discretionary forum dismissal. The statute 71031 states an action for damages may be enforced in the courts of the state. There could be no more plainer import to those words. The defendant would have this court say that an action may or may not be enforced.
That an action may or may not be enforced in the courts of this state. If the legislature or if this court finds that statute unattractive, it nonetheless cannot substitute its judgment for that of the legislature. It requires, I think, a dishonest reading of that language to say that it means anything else than what we contend it means, and the Court of Appeals recognized that. Now, do we nonetheless have a...
You would read may as must.
I would read may as may. May is permissive. We have the right to enforce our claim.
You may not.
If the statute said or may not, then I would agree with you, Your Honor, but the statute says we may, a claim may be enforced in the courts of this state. It does not say...
Are there legal cases that say may is permissive and must is not? Shall is not. And there's a difference between shall and may at the Alabama Supreme Court.
That's true. The wording in the Alabama statute changed only between the word shall and may. However, the important point I think about the Alabama statute is that after saying claims may be enforced in the state, it went on to add a whole new paragraph describing forum nonconvenience. It did not content itself with simply changing that wording. And I think if that's the only change that had been made, we wouldn't have a change in Alabama law. They clearly felt it necessary to add the entire ensuing paragraph about forum nonconvenience discretion. Under the statute, are there pockets of forum nonconvenience discretion that exist?
Well, the statute solely in the context of a wrongful death case.
It is part of the Wrongful Death Act, Your Honor. However,
why would in the middle of the Wrongful Death Act they just have one statute incident that applied to the entire world, to all possible causes of action for damage?
As opposed to, why would it include personal injury, or why?
Why don't you read this statute, this particular section, in the context of the entire statute, which is limited to one particular statutory cause of action?
I'm not sure of the reason for that seeming inconsistency, other than I think we're relegated to reading it that way, because the statute clearly does apply to personal injury claims, and I think frequently...
You're saying on its face it does.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think substantively it does too, because...
But that question has not been addressed by this court. Wasn't that expressed as that to open relief application to Gutierrez or not?
Well, I think Gutierrez resolved the choice of law issue and none other, but I do think Gutierrez made clear that the words of the statute were still governing. Gutierrez suggests that the statute does not mandate a particular choice of rule, a choice of law rule, but only permits enforcement of suit in Texas. We agree with this construction. That's the language from the Gutierrez case. It doesn't,
I don't think, insofar as Gutierrez made the statute apply or not apply to personal injury claims or not of mandatory nature to personal injury claims, I think it only applied to choice of law. If you place the result in Gutierrez alongside the statutory language, there is no inconsistency there. Moreover, I think Gutierrez was evidently an attempt to simply harmonize the result in that case, which had arisen before the 1975 amendment, with the new 1975 amendment, which took care of the whole choice of law issue. In any event, the statute now reads, an action for death or personal injury may be enforced. And
that's the way it reads.
That's correct, Your Honor, and I don't think respondents have, or rather petitioners have, come forth with anything in the legislative history to suggest that either personal injury is really not included there, or that entitlement to forum is not included there.
Does Texas have forum nonconvenience doctrine for non-personal injury action?
Your Honor, I think there is one case in all of Texas law that has applied the forum nonconvenience doctrine. That is the Fourth and Bean case. That was a case involving a commercial transaction. It involved non-residents on both sides, and it took pains to distinguish statutory provisions of an absolute right to a forum, distinguishing the Rue case, which in turn had relied on Allen versus Bass. Therefore, it may be said that there are little pockets of forum nonconvenience in Texas. That's one of them. Certainly the legislature has provided for forum nonconvenience discretion in the Family Code, which we contend, by implication, demonstrates that when the legislature decides to afford trial courts discretion to dismiss, they can do that, and they have done that in certain areas. And they're perfectly aware, I imagine, of any problems that may exist in the personal injury area. Forum nonconvenience exists, at least in the Forkham-Dean case, and that's about as far as it goes in Texas. There were the dissimilarity doctrine cases. However, I think the way to interpret those cases, as is evidenced by the language in his opinions, is that that was clearly seen as a jurisdictional defect. When the foreign law was pleaded, found to be dissimilar, the court had no choice but to dismiss. The dissimilarity cases do not embody the concerns or the considerations of the modern foreign nonconvenience doctrine. They don't talk about the location of witnesses. They don't talk about whether witnesses can be deposed here as opposed to there. It's simply an automatic dismissal for lack of jurisdiction, and the courts make that clear in the opinion. When this court in Gutierrez overruled the dissimilarity doctrine, it did not advert in that portion of the opinion to 4678 at all. Clearly felt that those were two parallel jurisdictional spheres operating, one dismissing for dissimilarity, the other unaffected by the dissimilarity doctrine, granting an absolute right to a forum.
If forum nonconvenience did exist here despite the statute, should a court under such a doctrine consider what a jury in another, or a fact finder in another country or jurisdiction might award, or type of legal assistance or courthouse assistance might be available to a litigant in that country? Are those two factors that should be considered in determining whether a forum is not convenient?
I believe they are factors that should be considered in determining whether a forum is available. I would agree, as I've said, that if it's simply a matter of how much money we can get in Costa Rica versus how much money we can get in Texas, I would say that's an impermissible consideration. The court ought not to concern itself with that. That's not appropriate. However, any formulation of the forum nonconvenience doctrine in any court anywhere requires that an alternative forum be available. The practical reality of the financial differences in litigation between Costa Rica and the United States is that no forum is unavailable, and I think that ought to be transparent from the defendant's eager insistence to get into that forum where they're not even subject to jurisdiction. That is what we contend ought to be considered, the ability to litigate at all. It's not an issue of relative attractiveness of jury awards.
Do we take into account the choice of law, whatever court this ends up in will eventually have to make as one of the factors?
That is a factor that is routinely considered in the federal cases, and if the court were to adopt the forum nonconvenience doctrine in this case, that would be a relevant consideration. We contend
But you don't have any problem with Costa Rica law as it's written. It's more the way it gets applied down there and the standard of what people think of as remuneration.
No, we do have a problem, Your Honor. The Costa Rican Civil Code says something approximating, for every wrong there shall be a remedy. Now, it goes without saying that there is no product liability doctrine in Costa Rica. There has never been a complex product liability suit brought in that country. There has never been a breach of warranty claim brought in that country. There has never been a strict liability claim brought in that country. There is nothing approaching the discovery that is available in this country, and I think obviously necessary to litigate against corporations with far-flung witnesses. There is not a jury trial in Costa Rica. Let's assume this case is transferred to Costa Rica or dismissed, and let's indulge in the fiction and assume that the case is brought. We want to depose a Dow official. Somehow we fly up to Michigan to depose a Dow official. In Costa Rica, a judge conducts a deposition. The parties do not depose each other. The parties submit questions to the judge, but the judge only asks what the judge thinks is relevant. Is a Costa Rican judge going to come to Michigan to conduct that deposition? Is an American judge going to conduct that deposition? At this point, I think imagining that the case will ever get litigated in Costa Rica is simply fictional, and that's what the defendants would have this court indulge in, and I think support for that proposition comes from the work of Professor Robertson and others who show that in the vast majority of cases, form nonconvenience dismissal in the United States means end of litigation, no remedy whatsoever. That recent study by Professor Robertson is discussed in my brief, and I urge the court to read it. That is empirical support for what ought to be intuitively obvious to the court.
Is that because the incentives are so low that you're...
The incentives are so low as to not possibly justify the expense and the time necessary to try or litigate these kinds of cases. One other point I would like to make in the form of...
Did I misunderstand? Did counsel say that they had stipulated both Dow and Shell that they would make the records and the witnesses available for
They'll only make them available in the United States. That's the stipulation, and that's what Mr. Conrad had just said. If I can urge the court to take one other thing into consideration. This case has been litigated now for 4 years. The defendants could easily have stood on their forum nonconvenience plea at the beginning of this litigation. At their insistence, we have litigated limitations questions. We have litigated entirely the issue of product exposure. It is unfair, and it's illogical, and it's not what the forum nonconvenience doctrine was designed to accomplish. To, after all of that litigation in the defendant's backyard, say, well, this case can't be litigated here because we can't get the witnesses. We've proved we can get the witnesses.
Are there cases on that doctrine, on estoppel doctrine or latches?
Yes, I think the typical or the recent formulations of forum nonconvenience say that it logically, forum nonconvenience is turned on its head after there's been a lot of litigation on the merits. The defendant could have simply said, to Judge Smith in the trial court, Your Honor, this case can't be tried here. No, we have conducted depositions. Both sides have made many trips to Costa Rica. All of that has taken place at defendant's insistence. Those substantive merits issues in the cases have been litigated. They cannot now come into this court and say, well, we really can't litigate here because we can't get the witnesses and we can't get the documents. I don't think any form nonconvenience formulation by this court, if it undertakes to make one, ought to allow dismissal after merits issues in the cases have been litigated. That simply turns the doctrine on its head.
What would you have us do? Abate the action until Costa Rica could do whatever it's going to do and leave the action pending here so that if Costa Rica doesn't do all it's supposed to do, you can come back here and finish out the litigation?
I think that would be cold comfort, Your Honor. I think that the case ought to continue to proceed. I think that there's no sense in saying, okay, we're going to stop this litigation. We're going to begin anew in Costa Rica where the defendants will not even produce their witnesses. I think that would be a waste of time. And I think...
You'd be facing a race judicata, too.
On which issues, Your Honor?
On the issues that were tried in Costa Rica. If you tried to...
Oh, that's correct. I suppose we would. That's true. And I simply reiterate, if those issues, some issues have been litigated here, it does not make sense to dismiss the case once those issues have been litigated here. In conclusion, I think the court ought to realize the unreality of this situation. It should be clear to the court that defendants are simply seeking to eliminate any liability exposure. Everything in this case is American, except now the plaintiffs want American legal remedies. The employer is American, the product's American, the defendants are American, the witnesses are in Texas, the documents are in Texas, the witnesses won't be provided in Costa Rica. There's no way they can ever be deposed if they're not provided in Costa Rica. Litigation has already happened in this case. There's no sense in requiring it to begin again from step one when the plaintiffs face obviously insurmountable hurdles.
As a policy standpoint, because of our more generous litigation procedures in this country, anybody injured here by a foreign employer is going to bring lawsuits here. And any foreign person injured anywhere in the world by a United States employer is going to bring litigation here. We're just going to attract like a magnet, I guess. And is that just one of the burdens that we bear in exchange for having developed a legal system that is more generous in its compensation to people who are injured?
I think that's a burden. I don't think it's an inappropriate one, and I think it's one that the legislature must have considered when they decided to entitle foreign citizens to the same remedies in the 1917 statute that Texas citizens enjoyed. But in that regard, I think the court ought to realize that personal jurisdiction doctrines take care of most of those kinds of cases. The Asahi case, situation involving a foreign manufacturer versus a tangentially related party in this country, eliminates those kinds of cases on jurisdiction. Finally, as Professor Weintraub himself points out in his recent law review article on the Asahi case, if we are to say that that kind of litigation is inappropriate in Texas, this is on page 65 of his article, then that kind of decision ought to take place at the highest levels of bargaining through treaties and on the legislative level. It ought not to be left up to an amorphous, largely unreviewable, nebulous set of factors that can be employed by the trial judge at his discretion, and that largely leaves the field open for dismissal of any kind of cases. I think that issue is largely taken care of by the existing personal jurisdiction doctrines, and if not, then that's a subject for our legislature.
Counsel, this may turn out to be immaterial, but the question is, could you take the depositions that have already been done here in this country to Costa Rica and introduce the testimony by the American deposition?
I don't really know if we could, Your Honor. I don't know. I'm sure my gut reaction is that the Costa Rican legal code would not, or evidence code such that it is, would not allow that kind of deposition. If it did, then we would be able to use that deposition. Needless to, and that was of the employer. We wouldn't have any evidence or discovery available of the defendants in the case. We have conducted a large amount of discovery from the employer, not from the defendants, and that simply underscores the fact that most of the remaining discovery in this case is from our side to develop our offensive liability case. Defendants have conducted quite a bit of discovery of us, product exposure and limitations issues. Most of the witnesses relevant to the case and documents relevant to the case that now need to be looked at are in this country.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Fortunately, in this case, because the same firm, the same attorneys representing the respondents in this case have also filed a number of other cases in the United States which have reached recorded opinion, we know the answers to some of the questions that this court is asking. Cited in the brief, you will find the Sabaha opinion, which was their first effort to file a group of the Costa Rican worker cases in Florida the trial judge there, United States Federal District Judge, dismissed it on forum nonconvenience, applying these very Gulf versus Gilbert factors that we've been talking about. His decision was analyzed in the reported decision by the 11th Circuit, which found that he had properly applied those factors, and this court's questions about the adequacy of remedy, the existence of discovery, any difference between rights of recovery are discussed in those cases. The plaintiff then filed a group of Costa Rican worker cases, also from the same plantations. In California, Mr. Balanfon has mentioned the Aguilar opinion. That opinion from that federal district court is included in this record and is available for this court to read. Respondents abandoned appeal. Respondents then, after filing Alfaro, went back to Florida and filed all of the Alfaro plaintiffs presently before this court as plaintiffs again in Florida. So the Alfaro plaintiffs proceeded up this chain to this court and simultaneously went back to Florida. They filed the Aguilar plaintiffs that had been before the California court again in Florida.
Were you a defendant in any of these?
Dow was a defendant, Your Honor. So was Shell. We were defendants, and therefore we are involved in those decisions, and you will see our name there. The federal district court.
No claims, at least before this court, of any kind of collateral estoppel or res judicata.
We are not making such claims, Your Honor. Although the I believe that the Florida court does discuss res judicata, did not apply res judicata to the Alfaro plaintiffs because it recognized that they were before this court. It specifically talked about the doctrines of res judicata and collateral estoppel and did apply them to the Florida plaintiffs who had been in the earlier Sabaha case. The second Florida case is named Cabalacita. That too is a reported decision that we've cited in the briefs. Just take it one step further. There have been subsequent cases yet filed again by the same firm in this jurisdiction again where Cabalacita, a Florida plaintiff, is now back in the state of Texas. So all of these plaintiffs coming out of Costa Rica have been in Texas, they've been in Florida, they've been back in Texas. This is simply the first case to reach this court.
What's the relevance of that?
The relevance, Your Honor, is that all of the arguments that have been raised concerning difference between Texas jurisdiction, Texas discovery, Texas parties, and Costa Rica have been addressed before in the reported decisions in Florida and in California.
The common thread is that the law of Costa Rica is pretty lousy for their clients, isn't it?
The common thread, Your Honor, is they don't want to apply the law of Costa Rica to their clients, and that's a common thread in almost all of the forum non-convenience cases that one sees reported in the United States where foreign plaintiffs are coming to the United States. It was exactly the case in Piper Aircraft versus Reno, and the court answered many of the questions that this body is asking today in that case about discovery rights, differences in law, and all of that thing. And it said those aren't the important questions. The important question, because these are people from a forum somewhere, and the only question is, in that forum, do they have a remedy? Doesn't have to be the same remedy. And is there a forum for their remedy to be heard? It's true in Costa Rica, as these six judges who've addressed this question previously have all agreed, as did the trial judge here, that occurred. And our Court of Appeals below does not argue that point. Our Court of Appeals below that gives this court this case did not find an abuse of discretion on the part of Judge Shern Smith in granting the motion for forum nonconvenience and dismissing the case. An abuse of discretion is the standard of review for forum nonconvenience. Court of Appeals just skipped over that and didn't find any abuse of discretion at all on his part.
Of course, the choice of law is something that we probably would not have to consider in
choice
deciding
of,
this case, although it may be a factor in forum nonconvenience.
Choice of law is something, Your Honor, that some court will have to consider. The Florida courts determined that Costa Rican law would apply if the case had stayed in Florida. If this case were to stay in Texas, the Texas courts will have to decide under the 1975 amendments to 4678 the substantive law applicable.
But for this, for our decision now, does this really hinge on, as far as saying whether forum nonconvenience is a document can apply, does it just hinge on what this word may mean? On the legislature.
Your Honor, I think that that is a significant aspect of this court's decision. It seems to me there are three questions. does forum nonconvenience as a doctrine exist in any form or fashion in the state of Texas?
We think it's clear, conceded it does.
Okay.
So we need
that. Second question is, under Gutierrez versus Collins or such other laws might be applicable, does 4678 preclude in a personal injury action only the trial court from applying the doctrine of forum nonconvenience? Third question, if it does 4678 preclude the trial court from applying forum nonconvenience to any cause of action filed by a foreign citizen in the United States or a foreign cause of action, be it personal injury or wrongful death? And I think the may be enforced language of 4678 is a pivotal point in the last two questions. And I've spoken as much as I can on what may and must mean. I think that argument is fairly crystallized in the court's mind.
If we get beyond that and find there is a form of convenience doctrine, non-convenience doctrine in this type of case, do the states have widely varying standards for that, or are they pretty much falling into line being behind what the federal courts have developed?
I think there is a review, Your Honor, in a case named Chambers versus Merrill Dow Pharmaceutical, which was a 1988 Ohio Supreme Court case. I believe it's cited in the Shell responsive brief filed herein. Footnote 3, that court went through and looked at all of the jurisdictions in the United States and tried to categorize them, finding some 39 of them that it could see had positively adopted forum nonconvenience, and the Shell responsive brief picks the others. But basically, the answer to that is almost all of them have adopted the Gulf versus Gilbert type public and private considerations, which is amply fleshed out not only in the federal jurisprudence, which have followed that basically since 1961, but also in all of those state courts that have applied them. So there are many cases which tell us what those public and private considerations mean applied to a wide variety of circumstances, and almost all of the jurisdictions who followed it have followed it all the way across the board with Gulf versus Gilbert. There are some in which they have applied it only to specific questions, and I think those are set out in the Shell responsive brief and in footnote 3 in the Chambers opinion, which is a 1988 Ohio Supreme Court opinion where the court applied the doctrine of forum nonconvenience.
Do you have any idea how many of those were adopted by legislative act and judicial act?
I think that footnote, Your Honor, may speak to that as to how many are judicial construction and how many are by legislative fiat. It may help the court to reach that conclusion. The question of will we have a lot of cases in this jurisdiction? Several points come to mind. Alien versus alien obviously is a case that's going to stay in this court and cannot be removed. I believe that the respondents misunderstand slightly the United States Supreme Court decision, the Admiralty decision in Chick Cam Chu, because what that decision left when the Supreme Court finally got through with the Fifth Circuit and ordered the opinion vacated, what it left was the conclusion that the plaintiff there, a foreign seaman in Singapore, had a Singapore law claim for wrongful death, which might be brought under, if it were going to be brought, under 4678 in Texas, and Justice O'Connor specifically instructed Judge Norman Black to amend the injunction so that the federal injunction would not impinge upon the Texas court's right to determine whether or not they were going to take that claim, meaning that those claims have not yet been, there is no conclusion yet as to whether or not those claims will come up this system, and it may in part depend upon this court's determination as to whether that maritime type of action will be coming on up through the court system, because you see now, after the 1982 amendments of the Jones Act, those cases can no longer be filed in the federal system. So if they're coming to the U.S., they're coming into the state courts, and they're coming to a state court which does not have forum nonconvenience, and that means undoubtedly Texas for any defendant that does business in the state of Texas. I'm only one lawyer, and the only thing I can add beyond that is, since the court asked about Bhopal, I represent a company named Union Carbide of India. In October 1988, the 60th District Court, sitting in Jefferson County, granted a forum nonconvenience dismissal to 2,700 plaintiffs who had brought suit in this state for the accident that happened in Bhopal, India. I would expect that if forum nonconvenience does not exist in this state, that those cases will continue to pin here. They will certainly be appealed up through the system. Again, I'm only one lawyer, and I know there are many others than myself, but I know there's a congressional record of testimony, which where that testimony is reported in the Jones Act amendments, where representatives of the oil and gas drilling industry who drill all over the world were speaking about their claims and the number of cases they filed. If the court wishes, we can file a post-submittal brief, provide that congressional record testimony to the court, but I think that it is obvious that there are many claims out there prepared to flow this way. The only reason we have not had many of those in the past is, as you may recall, until 1979 in Gutierrez, this state followed the dissimilarity doctrine. And therefore, if the law of Costa Rica or Mexico or Bangladesh or wherever were so dissimilar that Texas courts felt they couldn't apply it, they didn't apply it. And by that rather primitive but straightforward device, we avoided many of these cases that since 1979 we are beginning to see show up in the state of Texas and any other state jurisdiction that does not have the forum nonconvenience doctrine. Finally, I would simply mention to the court that there is a good argument that has been heard, listened to by the courts, and ruled upon in a number of the drug cases where forum nonconvenience has been applied. Anderson versus Wyatt, 510 F sup 1, and Jones versus Searle Labs, 444, that's 444 Northeast 2nd 157, a Supreme Court of Illinois 1982 case, where the courts addressed the argument, the philosophical argument, well, why should we have forum nonconvenience in these cases, and shouldn't we regulate the activities of the defendants who are manufacturing these products in the U.S. even though they're sold abroad? And what the court, when you boil it all down and strip out all the extra stuff, what those courts say is there is a balancing consideration here that a country that imports products must take into consideration. The benefits to the population of that country versus the risks of the product. In drugs, for instance, birth control pills or whatever, there may be strong reason to import those products into the country, even though there is a clear-cut risk. But the courts like these and like Piper versus Reno are saying that is a question that can best be addressed by the judges and the jurors in those countries who best understand that balancing in that country for that population. And American courts and American juries are particularly ill-suited to try to understand, for instance, in Costa Rica, do we want more foodstuff production and are we willing to use more pesticides to achieve it? Or on the other hand, are we so concerned about worker safety in the agricultural area that we're willing to reduce and throttle back our foodstuff production because of our concerns about the safety in the workplace? Those courts address that very argument, which I think is an important philosophical argument, and they resolved it in every case by saying that is a local concern, principally a concern that those importing countries must address, and they are best suited to address it, and forum nonconvenience dismissal will be granted, and those jurisdictions can then decide the outcome of the litigation in light of their answer to those philosophical questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Is there something fundamentally unfair and unjust about asking a Texas manufacturer to defend its product on its home turf in Texas?
The problem, Your Honor, is, as we pointed out, is that of obtaining a fair trial. The plaintiffs here have filed workman's compensation cases in Costa Rica. All of the medical evidence, doctor testimony, medical records, etc., is in Costa Rica. We cannot compel that to be brought to the state of Texas. The plaintiff's offer to produce plaintiffs here did not reach the medical evidence. There are two affidavits in the transcript, one of a Miss Jane Guti and one of an attorney from Costa Rica, Mr. Darren Bloom, which speak to this point. And what they point out is all of the questions about impeding other defendants, and they mention the manufacturer of the handheld applicator devices the farm workers were using, all of the evidence about exposure, all of the evidence about the competitive supplier, and that is mentioned in the Cassidy deposition, an Israeli corporation was supplying product to those workers immediately before this happened. All of that is in Costa Rica. Our problem is While Dow is in Michigan, while Shell has its principal place of business in Houston, we can't get that information into this courthouse. In order to be allowed to properly defend ourselves, we need to go where the evidence is located, and that is the basis that almost every court which has granted forum nonconvenience dismissal has granted it upon. It's because that body of evidence is located somewhere else, and therefore the only fair result is to allow the parties to litigate, so long as they have a forum, where that evidence exists and can come before the tribunal.
Have you attempted to get that discovery and join those parties in this case?
The plaintiffs, Your Honor, have filed a subsequent case suing Standard Fruit, of which they contend is the employer of those people. In the Florida actions, the federal courts which looked at Standard Fruit said Standard Fruit's principal place of business is in Central America. And in the cases, Chavarria, I believe is the name, that has been subsequently filed by respondents in this jurisdiction in Houston, Standard Fruit has entered and filed a plea to the jurisdiction. I have a copy of that pleading, and if the court wishes, I can supply it to the court. But Standard Fruit contests the jurisdiction of the state of Texas and has not made a general appearance in that subsequent litigation in this state.
Any other questions? Thank you,
Counsel. Thank you, Your Honor.
Court will take another brief recess.